The Oddcast.
Two guys yelling at each other about radio, music, and nonsense. And now, here's Max Tolkoff and Halloran.
And now with the intro, it's Max Tolkoff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Oddcast with Max Tolkoff and Mike Halloran. I'll be going it alone today. Instead of having Mike Halloran here with me, you will only hear my voice for the next half hour. A lot of this is because I have locked him out of the studio, and I can't take it today. I can't listen to him. So I'll just do it all by myself. Mike won't actually say anything. What? Come in.
I'm AMSRing this. I'm actually here, but I was just showing you how AMSR works.
You know, it's ASMR. You said AMSR.
It's AOC is what it is.
So in the ensuing weeks and years and months since we've been doing this, that...
ensuing, I thought it means coming up.
Or the exuing. It was past.
Right.
I don't know what... I have no idea what I'm saying. Here's what I'm trying to say. So that documentary Punk is over now. It was only 4 episodes. 4 hours. It's really like
they
not
crammed,
a... Or,
they crammed from the mid-60s...
Yeah,
all the way up to 2000.
In 4 episodes, it can't be done. L.A. alone would take 4 episodes. The point, though,
what
is this.
What is your beef with it?
Here's what I learned, because I'm a complete idiot when it comes to a lot of this history. Here's what I thought was fascinating. So Dave Grohl gets on there. Finally, we get up to the 4th episode. And I mean, he's kind of been in the other ones, but now we're up to Nirvana. And Seattle. And he made an interesting point because he's very articulate about these things. And I didn't think of it before, but it's always made sense, okay? He goes, what happened in Seattle happened because all of these bands that were touring never went to Seattle because it was too far to, you know, it was too much to like, all right, we're going to go from Chicago to San Francisco, but we could go, no, we're not going to go to Seattle and then down. That's a big pain in the ass. So all these bands, these punk bands, these touring bands, never went to Seattle. So they always felt like they were like a little, like Brigadoon, a little enclave that was not affected by anybody else. So Grohl says, so we were like, our attitude was, well, screw them. We're just going to do what we do up here in Seattle. And if the rest of the world wants to listen, it will. Otherwise, bugger off. I thought it was an interesting point.
It's a very interesting, especially coming from a guy who's from Ohio and D.C., who got invited to go up when he was doing tile work in Long Beach, if I remember correctly. He left. He came out here with his band Scream. They dissolved somewhere near San Diego, and he started doing a tile job in L.A. with some other punk rock people. And he got the phone call saying Nirvana was auditioning for a drummer because they'd gone through 2 or 3 drummers at that point. So he went up there to basically cross that great divide, basically to go up towards what's the through the woods of Mordor, what's the term I'm looking for here?
The land of Mordor.
The Mordor. It's funny you say that because it was right around that time that John Lynch knew that he had a problem with that radio station that he was, you know, 107.7 in
For people
Seattle.
Who don't know, John Lynch was the guy, was the GM of 91X, and then he owned the whole thing with Noble Broadcast Group, bought a whole bunch of stations. That's who John Lynch is. One of them being The End in Seattle.
But it wasn't called The End at the time. It was probably called, like, K-Lite or BS like that. And so he talked to Kevin and myself about, and the buzz was happening on Seattle already. Soundgarden had already released things on A&M.
Was K-Jet still on the air at that point?
No.
No.
No. Okay. There was, the public station was, dabbling in it. KRXK and KISW, I think, were the two other stations.
So when you and Stapleford went to sign on the station, and you're sitting up there going, all right, how alternative do we want to make it? How much like San Diego should we make it? What kind of city is Seattle versus San Diego? And by the way, I think the two cities they're similar in size, market size. Seattle's always struck me as like the San Diego of the Great Northwest. But when you guys were setting up the station, did you feel at any point that, hey, there's a different musical scene up here than there is down south, and perhaps we should adjust accordingly?
Yes. First of all, we didn't go up there and launch it. We went up there weeks, almost about a month or so in advance. It's a very funny story, but Lynch basically said, what do you think? And we're like, Yeah, there's a huge music scene up there. We knew it already. We were aware of what was going on. It's just that not all of it had bubbled up. We were already playing something off Bleach. We'd played something off the Sliver EP by Nirvana. And then we decided when we got there, we stayed at this hotel in Tukwila. He's in one room. I'm in the other. And he was monitoring whatever station he was monitoring. It's in the Marco Collins
and,
movie.
And who had a good grasp on the local bands up there? Who were you relying on?
We knew that there were people, just so you know, we knew there were people at other radio stations, Bill Reed, these kind of guys, that we could go to if we were going to successfully launch this thing. We knew that there was people that we could contact. So it wasn't about what we thought. It was about making sure that those people were going to be involved.
So local music was not a big thing in the very beginning.
It was. We played Mudhoney's Touch Me, I'm Sick, like in the first hour, I think, you know, to basically say we're aware, but we were still playing, you know, weird songs. You know, I interviewed Johnny Rotten in the first hour because he'd written that song called Seattle. It had nothing to do with Seattle. I said, why'd you write this song? He goes, because I was in the airport and I was bored. So,
how weird did Johnny look?
I feel horrible for him. He's got obviously some sort of a medical issue.
Yeah, it's called food. I have the same issue. I used to be thin, and now I'm a big fat, bloated bastard.
Let me finish the story. So
we get old and we get fat, except for you.
Stop talking about your fatness.
All right.
We're sitting in this hotel room, and this was the weird thing. I was pissed because he said, you monitor this station, whatever it was, KXRK, and he was going to monitor the other one. So I went, okay, and I listened to whatever it was, and after about 25 minutes, I was just like, this is the worst radio station I've ever heard in my life. And it's in Marco, it's like Foghat, followed by another song by Foghat. I didn't realize that Foghat had so many fucking songs out there. But the weird thing about the Foghats of the world is they had that sludgy, you know, type of thing. The grunge scene, and I hate using that term because I just thought it was like...
go ahead. Screw it. But you know what? We're allowed to use terms like that. You know why?
Because
we're in the business. Right.
So the whole thing about what was happening grunge-wise with the Sound Gardens, the Mudhoneys, and all that stuff, yeah. It sounded to me more like 70s rock. It wasn't California,
right,
SoCal
absolutely.
Punk.
Oh,
it was
yeah,
not
yeah,
that
yeah.
religion.
Sure.
It was not NOFX. It was not things from the Bay Area. It wasn't any of that stuff. It was different. And so when we got there, and they weren't playing it on those stations, unless it was the specialty shows on KISW and KXRK. So we sat there, and I called Kevin in his room. I go, hey, dude, can I monitor your station? And he's like, yeah, sure, you can do it. I had no idea that his station was just as bad as the other station. So there was two super mediocre stations playing shit. So we were like, this is going to be a cakewalk. We're going to come in here. Even if we just played cool alternative music from the 80s up until the 90s, because right. This was 91. We are there in probably end of June, beginning of July 91, and we launched August 23rd. We started teasing, I think, August 16th, and we launched the 23rd. And in the first couple, 3 hours, interviewed Johnny Rotten and a whole bunch of artists and played Smells Like Teen Spirit like 3 weeks before it came out because Rosie, who doesn't remember this, brought it with him.
I'm sorry. You can't just say Rosie. When you say his
Rosie,
full name.
John Rosenfelder.
Who worked for?
Geffen.
Okay. Thank you.
Brought the CD with him before it was released and let us play it because we'd already played like Sliver, a couple of other things from Nirvana earlier on. And we'd played, and by the way, this is the day, on the 23rd of August was the day that they were having a party, a record release party at the Seattle Center for 10 by Pearl Jam. That was the weekend it was coming out, and they had a party, and Pearl Jam were there at the party. They'd invited us. Jack Isquith had given us these super long postcards because it had the needle on it, you know, and it said, you're invited. I kept that thing for like years, and I thought, I'll eventually be able to show up at this party in 1991. But it was Pearl Jam's record release
that
weekend.
Wait, hang on just a sec there. So what you're saying is that because my worldview consists of, naturally, due to the propaganda of a certain music director that we had at WFNX, who claims that we were the first radio station to do anything with Nirvana. That apparently is false.
How do you mean anything?
Well, I don't know. No, that's not true. We were playing from Bleached, but... he said that this Smells Like Teen Spirit thing was going to be huge and nobody else was on it yet.
Nobody else heard it until beginning of September.
Where you were playing it up in Seattle.
We played it first. We played it and then Rosie took the CD back. He would not let us keep
it. Let's get Kurtzing Thomas on the phone so you can explain that to him.
Then you call him.
I'm not calling him.
I'm not going to call him either. He doesn't pick up my calls.
My calls either now.
He won't remember. He was too stoned. He won't remember what day he played it first. But I'll tell you, in those
days. He wrote a book. He wrote a 600-page book about Nirvana.
And breaking them.
Yeah, and nobody
talked about the book. He did in Bostonia.
Bostonia.
He didn't necessarily break it anywhere else. I'll tell you who was probably the biggest help out of all of these people back in the day was one of our programming assistants at the time who worked at Tower Records. Her name was Rochelle Fox. Rochelle went out of her way. She wasn't even 21 to get into the clubs, but she drove down to the Casbah the first time that Nirvana played there and picked the fucking band up in her car, a little Ford Focus or whatever she was driving at the time, drove them all the way back to the radio station to do an interview before they played the Casbah the first time. And that was Bleach era. And she did this because she was constantly hammering on me how much these bands were really amazing. She talked about these bands like they were the most fucking amazing bands on the planet.
And she'd been up there for a while. She was working at a local record store up there.
She was working at Tower Records.
Up there in Seattle.
No, it's in San Diego.
You didn't make that clear. You can make these things
clear. Okay. Rochelle Fox, before we launched The End in Seattle.
Yes.
She went to the Casbah in San Diego. She didn't drive from Seattle.
Thank you.
She didn't drive from Seattle.
See, even I supposedly know some of this shit, and I can't even follow what you're saying.
The Casbah is in San Diego.
I know.
It was a tiny club, held about 100 people tops, and that's where Nirvana played their first show in San Diego. They played. She drove down there, probably right after their sound check, picked their asses up, brought them back, and I think it was Vince Canova that interviewed them the first time.
Was this while Eddie Vedder was working at a gas station in San Diego during that time?
Might have been. I don't remember the month he moved to Seattle, but he moved up to Seattle and then recorded those things, and they toured as Mookie Blaylock shortly thereafter.
How come there's no love from him regarding 91X?
Is
there?
There is. There was, yeah.
There was? There is?
I'll tell you my funny story. I was, at one point, I was asked, kind of coerced to fly to Denver because KBCO was having a huge amount of problems. This is right before they brought Mike O'Connor in. Remember Mike O'Connor?
Yes.
So I had been offered jobs in other markets and stuff, and I don't think Lynch wanted to lose me at the time.
That's right, because Noble bought KBCO. That's right. I remember that. Yes. I know how that came about.
So we were having these meetings at 91X, and Lynch suggested that I go up and fix KBCO because they were basically...
I remember that. I remember you talking to me about that.
So I flew up. This was probably... This was when Pearl Jam was already huge. And Mike Watt was on tour with that Ball Hog and Tugboat CD that came out, and Eddie was on it, and Eddie decided to do the tour. He was like done with Pearl Jam for a while. He became the band. The backup band for Mike Watt basically is what the Foo Fighters became. It was most of the Foo Fighters and Eddie Vedder on guitar. I showed up to see one of their first shows in Denver, and I couldn't get to Eddie because of the backstage situation. So I was talking to Eddie's girlfriend / wife at the time, and I told her, I knew that when Pearl Jam was coming back out on the road, they were supposed to play the Del Mar Fair.
Right. Had he met you yet? Did you know him?
I'd met him more than a few times.
You get there, you can't get in, you see his girlfriend. I'm just trying to speed this up.
He'd come by 91X a bunch of times. He's good friends with Robin Roth, right?
Right.
He used to run clubs with his girlfriend, and Robin would be there all the time.
Cool.
This thing called Red Tape.
Okay.
So I talk to Beth, and I say, I know he's bringing a transmitter. They're supposed to play the Del Mar racetrack at that point for the Del Mar Fair, and the cops or the sheriffs tried to shut the fucking thing down because of they were trying to get away with the Ticketmaster thing. They ended up moving the show back to the sports arena. They avoided the Ticketmaster fees, and I'd asked Beth to ask Ed if we could broadcast the show. In other words, I would take his transmitter feed. He had a 10-watt transmitter. I'd give him my 100,000 watts for the night, right?
And
I hear back literally 2 days beforehand, you're on. And I'm like, I'm on. It's like, how the fuck am I on? Now I got to go get a fucking line printer.
Right, this is 2 days before the show.
2 days before the show. The show's like Friday and a Saturday. So we go in, and here's the bizarre thing about it. At that point, nobody knew who J-Core was, but they'd bought a station, 933, in San Diego, and they were remotely pumping in the Power Pig from Tampa or something.
The power pig.
Oh, my God.
So they had, for some reason, an ISDN line or matched pairs into the sports arena. So we go down there and we basically borrow their lines. I don't remember if we paid them for it, but we basically borrowed their lines.
You went up to where the lines came out of the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're using them. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
So my engineers show up there and we're basically telling people we're going to broadcast the show on Saturday live. We had permission from the band to basically patch into their thing.
Right.
And Eddie gave it to us because this is the station he grew up on in San Diego.
Right.
He knows of KGB. He didn't know of Rock 102.1 at the time. So we go in, we patch in the things, we test everything on the Friday, and we decide we're going to do the broadcast on the Saturday, the second day. I think it was a Friday, Saturday. So I invite his DJ guy that's spinning in between sets to basically come on 91X. And we have these things, and basically once the other stations find out that we're planning on doing this broadcast, this is like the Friday afternoon, they start calling Steve Leeds' brother, what's his name, Harvey, bitching and moaning. How come they got this broadcast?
Oh, who did? KGB?
Well, whoever it was.
Everybody was all pissed off. Like, how did that happen?
How the fuck did 91X get a broadcast
sort of
with
the
Pearl
way,
Jam?
Not to digress, but much the same way that they went nuts across the street at KGB when we got Lou Reed to do our TV commercial for 91X.
As if they'd ever played Lou Reed.
Exactly.
As if they'd ever done heroin over there.
They played Walk on the Wild Side. That was
once.
It. Once. All right, 20, go back to
the story.
So
the point is that we get the permission, but what they thought, KGB thought, that we were just going to patch into their transmitter. Like, in other words, we were going to take their signal out of their transmitter into our signal and then run it back. We were actually getting a clean feed right from their board. So it would come out of their board. They mix in mono, by the way, Pearl Jam, for some bizarre reason. So the whole show came out in mono, and it went to their transmitter at 10 watts, whatever frequency they had, and ours. And we talked to the Eddie camp beforehand, and Eddie walks on stage. At this point, word had gotten back to him that KGB and Rock 102.1 both were now having their little Marty units outside the sports arena and then transmitting the Pearl Jam signal back on their transmitters, which, by the way, is highly illegal. You cannot rebroadcast somebody else's broadcast, even if it's illegal, right?
Right.
So word gets back to him. I distinctly remember this because I'm in the audience. It's right around Declan's birthday in 93.
Your son.
My son, Declan. Yeah, my son. So it was October 2nd, 3rd, whatever it is. Weatherly had come down from L.A. And at the time, there was this little area that stood off the side. So Weatherly's sitting there, and we're watching, and the band is freaking magnificent. They're doing his thing. And then all of a sudden, Eddie walks up to the microphone. I've got it on tape someplace. I'll play it for you. And he starts going, F-A-M-A. Baja California, and the whole crowd goes Mexico, and
wait, what about the first part? The AKSA?
He couldn't get that part right. He lived in Seattle for too long at that point, so he couldn't get the AKSA Teria, which most people don't realize it's actually XETRA.
By the way, let me just stop you right there. In case anybody is not aware of this, we had to run a Mexican Siglas, which is essentially an ID in Spanish.
The legal ID.
Legal ID in Spanish. What, once or twice an hour?
Twice an hour.
Twice an hour. Once every half hour. And by the way, for you, people were going like, yeah, I listen to you guys all the time. Why do you run that Spanish language ID thingy? Because people didn't realize we were in TJ. Go ahead with your story.
So he attempts it. I'll play the tape when we're done with this broadcast because it's fucking hilarious. Weatherly turns around. He goes, how'd you get him to do that? I fucking just it was so weird. It was like, could you imagine? Like, here's the meeting. Eddie, look, I really need you to legally identify the radio station in between some of your songs.
Like, Kevin thought it was like a big conspiracy.
No, it's not that he's like, this is the thing.
How did you get him to do that? The answer, of course, is, he just did it. But nobody wants to buy that as an
Well, because it makes no sense that a guy who's on stage in front of 12, 13,000 people, whatever is playing at the sports show, it makes no sense that this guy would do this because technically, nobody in the audience, I mean, they knew we were broadcasting the show live, but he did say after that, he said, we gave one station permission to do the broadcast, and apparently every other station in San Diego now is glomming onto this broadcast. So I'd like to say this, F-A-M-A, and then he started doing it, and at that point, it was painfully obvious because the rest of the audience basically blurts in with this thing. And because he grew up listening to that, he loved the block party weekends. You know, when we were doing blocks of the Who, he talked about this afterwards. He interviewed Joey Ramone on the air after that show was done. I've got these on tape. It's fucking hilarious. We stayed until almost 1 o'clock in the morning.
Well, guess who's responsible for the block party weekend?
You.
Thank you.
You.
Of course,
it
wasn't me. It came from another place. It came from our original PD consultant, Frank Felix, who had developed the concept at KBPI in Denver.
And explain what a block party is.
It's just, at the time, it was three songs by one artist. And we would just do blocks all weekend long.
Block meaning three songs from
two or three songs from an artist. Big artists get three songs. Lesser artists get two songs.
So Tom Petty would get?
10 songs. No, he'd get three songs.
Okay.
Anyway, at KBPI in the 70s, we were not rated, you know, all 12 right. months a year. It was like two books a year. So we only saved block parties for when we were in a book. And then they were gone for like another 6 months, which is why they were so popular. And we always thought at 91X, well, maybe we're doing this too often. But it turned out that that was not the case because the weekend numbers were always through the roof.
We also turned into the Resurrection Sunday thing, which was also a direct result of how long 91X had been on the air at that point.
Right. So anyway, that was a great story. Apparently that's eaten up all our time and now we have to go.
Are you serious?
So
we're done already?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, actually. Have you been?
Here, let me see. No, we got 10 minutes to go, motherfucker.
Oh no!
All right. So anyway,
I can't take it.
Weatherly, I think, was fucking with me. Like, how'd you get him to do that? I think he knew. But the bottom line, it's really kind of bizarre that he would do it. Number one. Consequently, a few years later, I got to 94.9. I asked him the same question. They wouldn't let us do the San Diego show because the show was a Live Nation show, and I think Live Nation at that point had a big hook into.
So now it's all politics. It didn't get all.
So, but he did give us the one at Irvine.
Yeah,
he gave us the one at Irvine, and at Irvine he gave a few shout outs to the local. In fact, it's on an intro of one of their songs. It's like your list. He's hitting the post. The better's on there's like you're listening to the local independent radio station in San Diego. 94.9, and it's like,
boom,
I can't remember what song he was playing at the time, whatever the fucking track was. It's just, it's fucking hilarious, but you just don't get that in normal situations. Bob Seger would have never done that for ABX or W4.
Sure. I think if there's...
Because everybody was playing them.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, if you feel the love from a station in a particular market, I think bands recognize that. Sometimes they'll say stuff, you know, not always, but...
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And then sometimes you get mentioned in songs. But, you know, they mentioned Mexican radio stations, which you always presume, oh, he must have been talking about. But no, Mexican radio, he was talking about the old days, right? Stan Ridgway?
Yeah, sure.
Did you ever talk to him about that, why he did that?
No, I've never interviewed him. But
I tried to get a hold of him 5, 6, 7 times because I wanted to use Mexican radio as the theme.
So everybody, you know, not everybody knows, but the sister station in 91X was the Mighty 690 AM Top 40 station. You know, 100,000 watts out of Mexico, also Mexican radio. Their studios and transmitter were right off the coast road leading down to Ensenada. So their facility was great. They would look out over the ocean and they would see whales and submarines going back and forth all the time. Down the road from them was the original AM station that Wolfman Jack worked at.
XCRB, baby.
Was it XCRB or Express? I don't remember if it was that or Express. But anyway, there were stories of, you know, he would come down with all these gifts and hand them out to the kids and everything. That was Wolfman Jack in those days. Sorry. I don't know how we got off
keep,
on that
keep,
tangent.
Keep saying, I'm going to look it up. Wolfman Jack. But he also was on a whatchamacallit station, wasn't he? Texas station?
Or syndicated, or no, maybe he was. Well, the station that he was supposedly at during what was the movie? American Graffiti.
Right.
Was that a real station in Texas where he was?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Wolfman.
We
Jack.
Should know these things because we're
keep
in,
talking.
In
I'm
radio.
Gonna look it up.
I have nothing to say. You've said it all for like a half hour. Isn't our time done?
No, yeah, like
our time is done,
four
isn't
minutes.
It?
I'm gonna
no,
look it up right
I think
here.
It's
Early
done.
Career.
Right? You're giving me the thing. The cut.
He was born in Brooklyn. He went to Shreveport.
The cut thing in the neck.
He left Shreveport. He went to XERF at Ciudad Acuña. That's where he started doing it. Ciudad Acuña, which is near Coahuila. Near the Rio Grande, near the U.S.-Mexican border, and that's where he was, which is in near Texas.
Ah, oh, very nice.
So that was
very
the good. First one.
All right.
That was XERF.
Excellent.
Which means surf, if you pronounce it the right way.
Look, instead of dragging this out for another 5 minutes where people are just going to hear us talk randomly, we should just end it right now. It's a good time. You know, let's end it naturally where
we
it
haven't,
should
We
end.
Haven't done our shout-outs yet. We got emails in from Lenny Diana.
And also Lenny Diana.
Lenny LaLessandra? Is that how you pronounce his name?
I don't know.
What does he do for a living, by the
way? I have no idea. This is somebody that you know. I don't know that you...
He works people on records,
you attract
it?
All these crazy, nutty people, and I try to keep them all at bay. But you somehow welcome them in, which is why you're so popular.
I'm not.
And I am not popular. You're way more popular than I am.
I might have like a 2% lead over you.
I see way more. Here's the thing. When you comment on Facebook, you always get like 150 comments on the things that you say, and I get
You're
nothing.
You're high. You are absolutely.
No. Do you ever see?
How much weed are you smoking?
Not enough.
Let's give a shout
Never
out.
Enough.
Let's see if we get an email from Kevin Weatherly, the email address.
Should we just read random names?
That's what we're going to do. Is that oddcast, thatoddcast at gmail.com. That
Phil
oddcast.
Manning. Mike Phil Butcher. Manning.
His name came up the other day.
Richard Sands.
We were talking about the 90RX days when Phil ran it.
Oh, yeah.
What's Phil's real name?
And by the way, talk about, well, never mind. I don't know what his real name is. You told us last time.
I think what is
he doing now? Where is he? Why haven't
I'm
we
not
heard
sure.
from him?
I'm not sure. I'd
I
like
feel
to see
like,
him.
Here's the
I
thing.
Love him. I love Phil Manning.
I do, too. I feel like we need to, and by the way, I tried to get Bob Buckman to come on here today. I wanted Bob Buckman to come and chat
with
us.
Was he on 91X at one point?
No, he ran BAB, which Noble Broadcast Group bought in the final months that I was at 91X.
Well, where is he?
He's up in Oceanside. He was at doing the morning show on KGB, and they tossed his ass.
No,
they
he was doing him. Afternoons. He was on the morning show originally. They brought back Dave Shelley and
so
Chainsaw.
He and Co Lewis. So the two of them were doing a show, and they got rid of him. Like
that's
this week, he had no idea it was coming. He's got like 1,000 comments.
Who is generally the last person to find out that the PD is being fired?
The PD.
Who's the last person to find out that air personnel is being fired? The air personnel.
You know what the definition of optimism is, right?
A PD buying a house.
That's right. PD yes. who buys a house, a jock who buys a house, music director who buys a house. You know who doesn't have to worry about it? Salesperson. Salesperson could buy a house because right. they'll always be the last.
Except Kurt St. Thomas. He owns like 10 houses, right? Or, as we found out the other day, more fucked up and trippendicular.
All right. That's enough for
Steve
this week.
Steve Masters. We're going to have him on next week along with Dave Markey.
Maybe Bob Buckman. I want to talk to him. You know, they made us do stuff that he suggested on Long Island. He wanted us to do promotions in San Diego based on ideas that he had on Long Island. We've never talked about it. I've never met him.
But you grew up in Long Island.
I grew up on Long Island, and BAB was a wildly successful mainstream
rock
station.
So why wouldn't you listen to him? Maybe he knew
because he wasn't, first of all, he didn't know the format. He didn't know San Diego. He knew nothing about us. He was just doing, like, here, generic radio station promotions.
I get that.
And then, so John Lynch got it in his head. Here's the new golden child. And that was Bob. Not us anymore,
Let me ask a question. This is just me asking a really dumb, simple question.
Yes.
What did you know about alternative before you started playing it?
Nothing.
So why wouldn't Bob Buckman be able to help you with the promotion?
Because the promotions were kind of tied to our lifestyle, weren't they?
So give me an idea. What were the promotions that 91X was doing back then that were so fucking unbelievable?
I don't know. I don't remember. But they were mostly based around music.
And surfing?
Bands. Surfing.
Skateboarding things?
I don't remember, to be honest. Who should we have? We should have Rob Tonkin. Let's get Rob Tonkin on here.
That guy,
Alex talked to him for his thing.
Yeah, I know.
Why don't we talk to him for our thing?
Why don't we?
He can remind us about all the great things that we did.
When's the first time you invited Tony Hawk to come down to 91X?
I never did. You did. It was after my time. Don't forget, I left in 89.
When's the first time you had Bob Harrow come down?
Who's that?
The guy who invented the BMX bike. Or I shouldn't say invented it.
I didn't.
Revolutionized.
I know, I didn't.
Do you remember the movie E.T.?
Yes.
When did it come out?
82.
Was it? 82?
Yeah.
Hey, Siri, when did the movie E.T. come out?
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
I found 5 movies. E.T. the Extraterrestrial. E.T. Contact. They are here.
1982. You're right. How the fuck did you know that?
I just
1982.
You think
BMX bikes.
You know what I love about
remember
you?
Remember the BMX
bikes?
You think
I'm a total idiot. I just
love
that.
No, I don't think you're a total idiot. I just think it's amazing.
Partial idiot?
That you pulled that out of your ass. Bob Harwin, like, basically was riding one of those BMX bikes when E.T. was in the front. He was like one of those hardcore kids.
Uh-huh.
He lives here in San Diego. He's a musician as well, by the way.
What does this have to do with the price of chicken lips? What does it have to do with
lifestyle? You mentioned, we go now? You mentioned lifestyle.
Can we go? We're way over our time now. Can you just... No, the real one, the good one we have on tape, you don't have to do that anymore. So right, just say goodbye.
It. Roll the outro.
No, wait. To talk about the, what is it, the link?
ThatOddCast@gmail.com. Email us now. We're giving shout-outs tonight to Kevin Weatherly, Gene Sandbloom, Lenny Diana, Garrett Michaels, Roland West, Marco Collins. Who else are we missing? Bob Buckman, Cole Lewis.
Mike Butcher.
Brian Schock, who I saw this week,
Phil
by the way.
Manning.
Brian Schock is the skinniest, most healthy-looking motherfucker I've ever seen in my life. It's fucking annoying.
You know, he played golf with Tiger Woods once.
I know, but I'm fucking jelly.
Why don't we get him on here, too? He's all over the radio now. He's doing like 1,000 shifts on 94.9.
No, he did 3 shifts on 3 different radio stations. Like, yes.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty funny, actually. I like that.
All right, we'll invite, you right. invite him next
week?
Yeah,
let's invite him up here. Why not?
Okay, we're going to end the
show. Oh, there's so much shit we can give him.
We're ending the show right now. And guess what? Next week we're going to have... Is it next week we'll be on?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to shoot for Brian Schock.
Right on.
Slam the door.